Coming up next, WWER presents Your Care Partners, a show dedicated to providing support and education to our community about caregiving. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home. Experienced professional caregivers Jill White and Marty Allman have casual conversations about care, offering advice and tips to help navigate caring for others. Jill White is a certified dementia practitioner and an Alzheimer's Association facilitator for caregiver support groups with over 30 years' experience working in long-term care. Marty Allman is certified as a master trainer for the Best Friends approach to Alzheimer's. She is a certified psychiatric nursing assistant with over 20 years' experience working in long-term care.
To Your Care Partners, Navigating Care for Others on WWER 88.1 FM, listener-supported radio. This is Marty Allman, and I'm Jill White, and welcome to our podcast.
Yeah. Today, I think our topic is going to be how to find patience when caring for someone. It's real easy to
lose patience.
Lose patience, to be tired and snap. And the first thing I want to say is, try not to feel guilty. Those things happen. I think you and I had a conversation about somebody saying something like, you know, is this the first time you've gotten in an argument with your mom or
right.
your husband
yes.
or whatever?
Spouse.
You know, those things happen. And sometimes you do end up snapping at each other. And we just don't want anybody walking yeah. around carrying guilt for a little,
right.
a little snippy situation.
Because they do happen in any relationship. Often, so it's not going to be that much different. You may have some pangs of guilt, but you just have to find a way to push that aside and realize that you're dealing with a really, really tough situation and find ways to cope with it. Patience is probably the hardest thing to find, but it is the one thing that will get you through the journey and make everyone happier.
Yeah, let's just kind of lead into that with one of the reasons why we want to talk about patience is when you're dealing with someone who, you know, both of us are very familiar with Alzheimer's, but there are also other medical conditions, mm-hmm. Many medical conditions where you might need to be a little bit more patient in situations. Mm-hmm. With someone with Alzheimer's, though, it takes at least, at the very least, 20, 30, 40 seconds for them to process what you're mm-hmm. saying or what you're asking them to do. And so you need to keep that in mind, you know, if you're getting dressed in the morning or getting someone up in the morning, you know, you need to give yourself time or give that person time to process what you said and then be able to answer you back.
Yeah, and sometimes depending on the stage, it can be 60 seconds, it could be 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. So at that point, usually the person that has asked the question or given an instruction has lost patience and has moved on to the next thing. Meanwhile, that person is finally getting to the point where they're going to respond to the first question mm-hmm. or you know, command that you gave or, you know, request. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very confusing. It's hard to find the patience because you're trying to get tasks done, and we always tell folks to sort of switch how you're thinking about it. Don't look at it as a task. Look at it as a small period of time in which you and this person you're caring for are going to get something accomplished, whether it's getting dressed, having breakfast, getting into the car, you know, all those things are going to come with delays and frustrations. And if you're frustrated, that person you're with is usually going to be picking up your feelings and making them more anxious and less cooperative, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Or just saying, that's it, I'm done and I'm not going anywhere. You're not taking me to the doctor's today. I'm done.
Right, because they don't want to deal with someone being impatient with them.
Yeah.
And another reason why you need to be patient, whether your person has memory loss or cognitive issues or whether they have physical issues, mm-hmm. is because if they feel rushed, if they feel like they're being an inconvenience, then they will rush themselves, and then that's when accidents happen.
Yeah.
They can trip over their own shoes, or they can grab something mm-hmm. abruptly and lose their balance. So just know, if you're going to make a doctor's appointment, mm-hmm. go to church, whatever your social thing is, make sure that you're allowing yourself what might have taken you no time at all to get into the car or get dressed or get a coat on. You know, allow yourself at least 20 to 30 minutes longer.
At least, I was mm-hmm. going to say, you know, build in that extra time mm-hmm. around a different, you know, an extra half hour for getting ready, an extra 15, 20 minutes getting in the car, and then time to get out of the car and get into the office. So you really right. do have to build in a lot of extra time, which is why those doctor's appointments can be an all-day frustrating
yeah.
affair.
Yeah. And speaking of doctor's appointments, Jill has this wonderful card from yes. the Alzheimer's Association. It's generally for people with Alzheimer's, but I think it could be used for someone that might have a cognitive impairment of some mm-hmm. sort, or might have difficulty communicating.
Yeah, especially helpful if you're out ordering, you know, at
food,
a restaurant,
yeah.
and you just hand it surreptitiously so the person you're with doesn't feel humiliated or know that you're pointing out that they have an issue. And the card just says, "Thank you for your patience. My companion has a memory impairment disease and may require a few extra moments. Thank you for understanding." So,
and that kind of makes me choke up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there have been times when I've been with a client and I didn't have that card, and walking them into a doctor's office, and I am not trying to make, you know, receptionists sound bad or anything like that, but they've got a really busy job. And there have been times when I've been with a client and, you know, people haven't been respectful to them or me with them. Like, I should be, you know, directing them better or something like that.
Yes.
So those of you who work in doctor's offices or nursing homes or whatever, you know, you're a waitress or hostess or whatever your profession is, if you run into someone who seems to be having a little difficulty communicating, or is with someone who is communicating, just please be patient.
Yeah.
Again, be patient, be nice,
and ask them to be patient, whether mm-hmm. it be verbally or with a card like that. But call ahead when you're making appointments, especially to the doctor's offices, because let's face it, those doctors are being paid to see your client, your loved one, whoever it is, mm-hmm. and they need to allow the right amount of time. And it helps them to understand the person coming in so that they can automatically mm-hmm. say, oh yeah, I don't want to push here because it's going to take her a while to respond. And depending on where they're at, also ask the physician, the nurse practitioner, whomever, to direct the questions to the person who is actually their patient.
Yeah.
If that's possible.
Yeah.
Not talk about them as though, you know, they're not even in the room. That a lot of people get very upset with, you know, they're bringing their husband to the doctors and the doctor's talking to the wife about the husband mm-hmm. as though the husband's not right there listening.
Right. And actually that happened with my dad and I. You know, we were blessed in that he did not have any memory issues or anything like that, but he was a pretty sick guy.
Mm.
And so we would go into the doctor's appointments with him just to take notes and stuff. And often we would find that the doctor or the person doing the intake, you know, would direct their questions towards us. And then I would just look away and not acknowledge them because I wanted them to pay attention to my dad. So, I mean, you know, there's ways to do it without calling them out on it, but just kind of not pay attention to them. And
or you look at your dad for the answer.
Mm-hmm.
You look to him to answer the question they kind of asked of you.
Right.
And that gives them the clue that, guess what? My person is quite competent enough to answer their own questions. So please direct it to them without having to say that.
Yeah.
You know, default. Because it can be belittling,
mm-hmm.
really, to that person. You know, they're already struggling, and now they're being treated like they don't know how to answer simple questions, you know, to a doctor or whatever.
Right. Anyway. And they know how they feel. Also, when you call the doctor's office, you can say, is there a better time of day
mm-hmm.
for me to bring my person in where you all might have a little more time? Is it better if we come first thing in the morning, or is it better that we come, after your lunch break or at the end of the day.
But make sure that your person is a morning person if you're making a morning appointment.
Yeah, of
course. That's going to have a big and the amount of time that might be necessary as opposed to, right after. Sometimes right after lunch is a good time if they haven't gotten too backed up because they're sort of refreshed after their, whatever, 10 or 15 minute break between patients. But your person is more alert. Conversely, if they're later stage, then the earlier appointments are better because that's when your person is probably going to have the most energy, be able to converse or answer questions, especially if they're suffering from sundowners. So it's really an individual.
And sundowners is a whole nother topic to
that's
cover.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, that's another podcast. But it is something that occurs in people that have dementia. But it also can occur in people who don't have dementia at a certain age. Do your research.
Yeah.
If you're curious about what sundowners is, you can look it up online. And, we will discuss it at another point. But that was a good point. You don't want to bring somebody having a sundowners moment to a doctor's office.
Probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Not good results.
No. No.
One of the things that the staff basically in a community found helpful, and then we of course talk about it for folks that are dealing with people at home, in order to make it easier for them to get dressed, put the entire outfit on a hanger with the outer clothes going on first, and then like the underwear being the last things on the hanger, so it's the first thing that person sees when they're going to be getting dressed. So that may trigger them to realize without having to think about the order. It's just automatically right there. This goes on first and this will go on next. There may be oversight needed. Some people are still able to, muscle memory, they can still get themselves dressed. Sometimes the shirt may be on backwards or not buttoned right, but I think the thing, again, we've talked about a lot is don't take away the ability of this person to do for themselves as much as possible. Because once you do it for them, they kind of become helpless. And then it may be more expedient in the short run, but in the long run, anything that they can continue to do for themselves, whether it's dressing, bathing, feeding themselves, whatever that is, it really makes it easier for the caregiver and the partner they're dealing with. And I think there was a story from years ago in the memory care household, Sweet Memories.
And was it the?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have psychic communication.
We do have psychic communication. So we, Jill and I worked for an organization that had adopted this philosophy of making our community like a person's home. And so the staff and everybody who worked in the building was educated on, we had to be re-educated on how to take care of our residents.
To be a household.
Yeah, and it was a complete culture change.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we did, usually, typically, in a nursing home, typically your breakfast or lunch is brought on a tray. And, your silverware's wrapped up and, you've got your straw and, you've got lids you've got to undo. And we realized as we were going through these trainings that, this is really overwhelming to somebody who has, mild impairment. This is overwhelming to somebody who's in pain even or on heavy medication. And so what we did was we actually began to cook in the unit. We were fortunate enough, and I hate that word unit, but we began to cook in our household.
Yes.
And we were fortunate enough to have a refrigerator and a stove, and we had a steam table that was brought in. And so we had a person who did housekeeping, but she was also a cook. And we had a lady who had to have assistance with eating. So we would feed her. And it was just kind of a thing. We all just assumed that, this person needed help feeding. And once we started cooking in the household and we gave people time mm-hmm. to smell the food
yep.
and look at the food mm-hmm. on their plates. And we sat down and had just like a regular meal where the staff sat with the residents. Yeah. It encouraged this one particular woman who had always
for years, many years. Been an assisted diner.
Yeah, had been an assist. Thank you for that word.
I love it. Yeah, I will not use that other word.
Yeah, I know, and it's that's part of the culture. But anyway, so this woman picked up her spoon on her own and began feeding herself, and we all just had a moment. There were probably about 15 of us. I don't want to get upset.
It was very
anyway. It was a beautiful moment because mm-hmm. we realized that at some point somebody decided that it was more efficient
yep.
to assist this person with dining rather than just give her the time. Mm-hmm. to do it. Now, there are people who do need assistance sure. with dining. We're not saying everybody, but we realized mm-hmm. that somewhere along the line,
someone's in a hurry.
Someone was in a hurry, and that's why it's so important, because what yeah. were you saying? You don't want to miss those moments.
Right.
You don't want to...
I mean, you can... Again, don't look at it as a task. Don't think mm-hmm. of it as, oh, we've got to be done here in 15 minutes. She has to hurry up and eat. There shouldn't be a time frame. You know, you need to plan around it, obviously.
Right.
But because once, usually, and that's kind of a miracle story, because typically once someone has not had to do for themselves those certain things, they lose that ability.
Right.
In this particular case, she retained that muscle memory that somehow got triggered by the smells, by the sights, by
the
sounds,
yeah.
watching people set the table. So it yeah. gave these folks time to process, oh, I'm going to have a meal. And that can also trigger the urge to eat, because quite often people go, they just don't want to eat. Well, because you're just plopping something in front of them without giving them the time for their brain to send messages that mm-hmm. I'm going to have a meal and I'm going to be tasting some things. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's all part of who we are. Those little innocuous things are very, very mm-hmm. important to what you're doing.
And yeah. Yeah.
The team, you know, it was amazing. I mean,
it was amazing. And that was just one,
yeah.
you know, one aspect of realizing
yep.
That things needed to change.
Yeah.
And for me personally is one of the reasons why I'm doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. And for you, it's also for, you know, caregiver support, but caregivers need to be educated.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody just says, oh, one day I'm going to be a caregiver, you know?
Yeah. It's usually, yes, it's not something you've been pining for your whole life.
Right.
Like, I can't wait until I have to take total care of someone else that I love.
Right.
But that, you know, completely flips our lives upside down.
Right.
You know? But I think, again, getting back to the patients, if you are aware of it and can build it into everything you're doing, mm-hmm. find something else to do during those moments or minutes mm-hmm. so that you're not standing there tapping your foot, you know.
Right.
You know,
which can happen.
Of course it can. Which is why it's important to try to be flexible with the time that you have set aside for whatever activity mm-hmm. you're doing. Another story I'd heard from someone else who used to go to different communities doing massages. And this young man was visiting his mom, I believe it was a nursing home, every Sunday, and she did not appear to know who he was, and he was talking to one of the staff while this particular person who was there doing massages, or was there to do massages, overheard him saying, I don't know that I can keep coming to visit her anymore. It's killing me. She doesn't even know I'm here, and it's really, really hard for me. So the massage therapist talked to him briefly and said, asked him if he'd be comfortable doing a hand massage for his mom. She would be giving the directions, you know, because she was doing them with other staff, with other patients and such. And he kind of agreed to do it, even though he was a little uncomfortable with the whole thing. Well, not to drag it out too long, she gave him instructions, or she was giving everyone the instructions. And the first instruction was try to make eye contact if that's possible. If not, that's okay, but explain each step of what you're going to do, take your time, and explain to them what you're going to do so that anyone with cognitive impairment will have the time to process it and understand. You are going to lift up their hand. You are going to put some cream on it. You are going to be massaging it and smoothing it into their hand or arm. Well, while they were doing this, he was paying attention to what he was doing with his mom's left hand when all of a sudden he realized her right arm was moving. And she actually lifted up her right arm and patted him on the cheek, and she actually had a tear coming down her cheek. He then had tears coming down his cheeks. Everybody in the room was then crying. But it was such a beautiful example of the time and patience it takes for your person to get out of wherever they are in there. And they're in there. They're always in there somewhere, you know? And it changes over time. But the more patience you can exhibit, that's such a gift to give to that person. And then they're happier, and of course, then you're happier.
Right.
So that was another kind of a powerful example of trying to find the patience to be patient.
Right. And, you know, something, it reminded me, triggered something when I was in school to get my psychiatric nursing assistant certification. The teacher, she was really good. And we practiced on each other, and she talked a lot about telling, like you were saying, that the massage therapist, she said, you know, tell the person what you're doing. You're invading their personal space. You're not meaning to. It's not an aggressive thing, but it can be interpreted that way.
They don't know that.
Yeah, whether somebody has a cognitive issue or maybe they're just not feeling good that day, and they don't want to be, you know, just somebody putting their socks on and somebody, you know, putting their pants on or tying their shoes for them in a hurried way. And so she was told us to be very methodical, you know, on how we approach them, you know, making eye contact first always. And that's just general. That's what most people do.
That's what humans do usually.
Yeah, most people do. But I mean, some of the pain medications people are on can make them kind of loopy. And so she step by step, you know, now I'm going to put your shoe on. How does that feel? Is that too tight? And just being able to explain what you're doing normally slows you down.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a, yes, you're doing it for the person, but at the same time, doing it for yourself, because it makes you slow down if you're explaining everything you're doing. But I don't know if I got off topic or not.
No, and it also gives them dignity, because you're including them in a process of something that is all about them.
Right.
So by doing it yourself and not talking to them, you're just treating them like, I don't know.
Right.
They're not there. You're just, you know, doing it on your own. So that, I think, inclusion really, really is key to keeping them invested and involved too.
And maybe just looking at it like, you know, you're a team. I feel like when I was caring for my dad, and he was, you know, his physical abilities were declining, I did sort of feel like we were kind of a team, and he'd be like, well, Mart, okay, I got to do this getting out of the car thing, and standing by the car and letting him try to get up and get out, and it did take longer. We were fortunate. I'm going to get off topic a little bit. We were fortunate enough that probably right at the beginning of my dad's care, the hospital that he was going to was a military hospital. They realized that they needed to do some culture changing, and they actually put a team of doctors and nurses together, and they called them the Silver Team.
Oh my goodness, that's
wonderful. And so they were all doctors and nurses that had been trained to deal with older people, retirees, and so we were fortunate in that. So, you know, if we were late, we didn't feel bad. We locked in, and they were, you know. I'm going to bring this up too. I had a conversation with my own doctor recently. You know, if you can talk, you know, if you can, if you've been going to the same doctor for a long time, or if your parent has been going seeing the same physician for a long time, you know, what do you know about, you know, this?
Yes.
I know, you know, you're a doctor. I'm not questioning your abilities, but I want to know, do you, you know, what do you know about being patient? And you know, this is a journey we're going on, and you're going with us. I mean, I don't know if a doctor would be insulted or not, but I think it's important to have that conversation. Like, we're trying to have a little bit more patience with mom because she's moving a little bit slower.
And if they're going to be part of your team, that's going to be important. They have to understand that the dynamics have to shift a little bit to allow for the extra time they might need. And again, you can broach the subject when you're setting up the appointments. We're probably going to need some extra time.
Yeah.
Because it's taken mom a lot longer now to actually answer questions.
And, I mean, unfortunately, if you're not feeling that from your doctor,
get another doctor.
Find another one. And there are doctors. There are gerontologists. Yep. There are a lot of nurse practitioners that
specialize
in gerontology.
Yeah.
So, am I saying that right? Gerontology. I don't know why I'm questioning it.
It
didn't sound right.
Word search.
So did we get off topic? Is there something else we wanted to... Oh.
Do we want to do this too or not really?
Yes. Okay. I want you to tell that
story. All right.
Story.
So one more patient's story. This one, the punchline is a picture is worth a thousand words. So again, this is a tale borrowed from someone else in the industry, in the business, that was a caregiver. And this was at a community, I believe, again, it was probably a nursing home. And they were having an activity, and a new person had been brought into the room. They were doing an art project. So this woman was seated at the table. She did not communicate, this woman. She was unable to communicate. So they put the materials in front of her, and we might have talked about this briefly before, but anyway, she didn't move. She didn't touch anything. She just looked at it all, and 5 minutes went by, 10 minutes went by, 15 minutes went by, and the caregiver kind of said to one of the staff, maybe we should remove her from this situation because it's probably uncomfortable for her. Maybe she's thinking she's expected to do something and she's not able to do it. She doesn't know what it is. Well, they were just about ready to remove her from the table when she picked up her arm and reached for actually the furthest paintbrush. It wasn't even the closest one. And she dipped it in some blue paint and started to draw lines down the page, which at this point they were all high-fiving each other. Like, yes, yes, it worked. She's doing it. That's great. Well, again, a long story, even longer. About 45 minutes later, the picture actually had evolved. Those blue lines had little gold dots on them because those gold dots represented windows. Those blue lines were actually buildings, and in the background was like a reddish sky with a beautiful yellow sun. And I have a tiny little, because I took a picture of the actual large picture that she did, but she had grown up and lived and worked in New York across the street from the park, from Central Park, and she had drawn the buildings. At the bottom of the picture there was grass and trees, but it was just such an amazing, and at some point
it totally looks,
I mean,
it looks like a New York skyline.
Exactly. And had she not been allowed the 20 minutes before she could even pick up the brush,
the particular brush that she wanted,
exactly, yeah, not just what was right in front of her and easy. So again, understanding the time that it takes to process every request, answer to every question, next step in whatever tasks they're performing. You know, pick the knife up, pick the fork up, and then put it down again. I mean, it you really are breaking things down into basic movements, and you have to do everything in your power to slow your brain down and slow yourself down in what you're expecting. And how you're even giving it out there. I mean, I'm a obvious type A talky person, and I sometimes steamroll people. And so for me, it's a definite conscious dial it back, slow it down. And I mean, you're not underestimating how difficult that can be, but the results are usually well worth the efforts that you have to make to change a little bit about how you're dealing with this person.
Right. So let's talk about patience. You're home, you're taking care of your person, and you've just about had it with taking that deep breath, and you just are so frazzled and not looking forward to going out the door to wherever you have to go, and you're just, you know, maybe rolling your eyes, you're feeling that frustration and it's building in you, and you don't want to have that feeling. So now you're slamming yourself with guilt for having that feeling, and yet you still have to get this person out the door. Am I speaking to anybody right now?
Try not to erupt.
Right. We wanted to just kind of give you a heads up. Cancel the appointment.
Reschedule.
It's not that important. I mean, obviously, if there's a treatment that has to be done, that's another story. If it's just not that important, just cancel it.
Yeah.
And then we want you to call your local assisted living and see if they have a respite program. Many assisted livings will take a person in. It's usually for, at the very least, a week at a time.
Yeah, usually not much less than that, because it's a lot of work.
But it's an opportunity for you to kind of reset and not have to worry about your person if they can just go somewhere else for a while. You gain your personal space back for a while. That person is going to be medically taken care of, and it's for a brief period of time. Also, if you need to go, if you need to get out of town, you need a break, you need a vacation, you can't do this, call your local agency on aging, because usually they might have a recommendation for an assisted living in your area or a nursing home in your area. Convalescent center.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want to call it.
All of that.
All that.
For a respite. Usually they call it a respite stay.
Yeah.
Because it is temporary in nature. But you're getting all the care that's needed.
And a lot of times those area agency on agings also provide in-home care. So you may be able to go, you know, leave overnight or for a weekend, and then you've got people in your home helping your person, and that person is in their home, which is really nice.
Yeah.
That's an ideal situation. It doesn't always happen that way, but
we have to verify, because I haven't, it's been about a year, but the Alzheimer's Association also always offered a $750 respite grant, which could be put towards home care or in a community, you know, facility, assisted living, nursing home, whatever. So, you know, reach out and find out what kind of support there might be, even if it's partial. Maybe you can subsidize it or get the family to help subsidize or whatever it is, because when you're at your wit's end is the worst time to be dealing with some of the hardest things you're dealing with.
Yeah, and it's time to pull those people in from your parishes.
Yes.
You know, your list, we talked about it and we're going to bring it up again. In your journal, you should be making a list of things people can do for you to keep you from getting to that point. But also, you know, who's that person you can call that's like, look, I need to get out of here for the night. Can you come and stay with mom, dad, whoever? Do it, because it's hard enough. You don't want to be walking around feeling guilty or feeling resentful.
Yeah.
I mean, because it can happen.
Sure.
Those are natural things. And the last thing we want you to do is beat up on yourself. You're doing the best. You're doing the best that you know how. So
you're a warrior.
Yeah.
You are a warrior
if
you're caring for someone, whatever the care needed is. It's a very, very overwhelming, difficult task and journey. Mm-hmm. So call in the paratroopers.
Right. And
let them help.
There are some people, I have talked to people who are like, I have nobody.
Yeah.
I have no siblings. Yep. I don't have any family. I don't know my neighbors. I'm at a loss. Then the Department of Social Services can be a good resource. If you don't have anybody, you can't call anybody, I would say fall back on your local Department of Social Services. They have an adult program for seniors or adults who, you know, may need care or protection. And we'll touch on that whole piece later too. There's so many things that we can discuss about this.
Oh, veterans aid in attendance. There are benefits available to veterans and or their spouses. So definitely reach out to the Veterans Association nearest you to find out what might be available, whether it be respite or long-term in the home, outside of the home, in a community or facility. So there might be options.
Yeah, and again, the program is called Aid and Attendance, and it's for veterans.
So as we usually wrap it up, if you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen at iHeartRadio or WWER 88.1 FM or online at WWER.org. Or go to anchor.fm/yourcarepartners/episodes.
Our Anchor podcast is listener supported. Jill and I decided, why not? If you know, if people would like to donate 99 cents to us to help us with production, because we really don't know what we're doing technically.
Shocking.
That would be great. But by no means are we asking for your money. I mean, we kind of are, but not really. And
we love our listener-supported radio station,
yes.
WWER.
Yes. Donate to them if you like our podcast.
Yes.
And then our podcasts are also available on YouTube and Spotify. You can just get a kick out of watching us on YouTube because we're we're just silly on camera. And then please send any questions or concerns or suggestions for future topics to our email at carepartners@wwer.org.
Perfect. We're here to help you, so help us help you.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Just know you're not alone, 'cause
I'm gonna make this place your home. If you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen online at WWER.org.
Please send questions, concerns, or suggestions for future topics to our email, carepartners@wwer.org.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.